March 25th, Exxon press conference, along with Coast Guard press conference.
The Exxon portion of the press conference has been postponed, but a Coast Guard spokesman is now giving a statement to the press corps.
Prepared to talk much about what's in those papers. Coast Guard Captain of the Port, Commander Steve McCall, has subpoenaed the master and will subpoena two crew members from the tanker Exxon Valdez. The order requires them to remain available to the National Transportation Safety Board investigators who will arrive Sunday. The board will investigate the cause of the March 25 grounding, which is cause of the release of about 11 million gallons of oil, now forming a slick of almost 50 square miles, and that's as of about 4 o'clock this afternoon. The Coast Guard Pacific Area Strike Team, a group of pollution specialists based in California, is setting up pumps which will be used to transfer oil from the Exxon Valdez to the Exxon Baton Rouge. Exxon contractors have placed a containment boom around both vessels in the event that the transfer releases any more damage caused. Coast Guard men and women from Marine Safety Office Valdez and the Coast Guard Strike Team will continue to monitor the transfer process. The Port of Valdez remains closed to commercial vessel traffic. Passenger-only vessels may transit the area, but may not approach the Exxon Valdez any closer than 500 yards. The Coast Guard will remove no vessels from the Port of Valdez to the vessel owner will be responsible for any secondary pollution.
Well, I lost it.
Exxon has been granted permission by state and federal agencies to test the effectiveness of chemical dispersants on the oil and in-place burning methods.
Yeah.
Exxon will need additional Coast Guard and state approval before further using either method. The Coast Guard jet, equipped with an infrared radar system, is en route from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, to survey the spill. The Coast Guard will use the jet to determine the size and boundaries of the slick. It is expected to arrive late this evening at Elmendorf Air Force Base. Exxon pollution contractors have removed about 700 to 1,000 barrels of oil from the Sound with mechanical skimmers and containment booms. Cleanup is scheduled to continue during daylight hours. That's the end of my statement. I realize. Here's a question. Any questions? As far as I know, sir, there are contract boats that are under contract to Exxon and Alyeska. I'm not sure of the particular types.
Is the subpoenas that are being issued, are they unusual in any way?
No, sir. The captain of the port or the investigating officer will often issue subpoenas when an investigation is being conducted, so it's not unusual at all.
Is the master the same as the captain of the boat?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. The master is the same as the captain of the vessel.
You know what positions these two crew members have that you're
supporting? I'm not sure. I believe one's the third mate and the second one was the helmsman.
Speed of the vessel at impact?
No, sir, I'm sorry, I don't.
Can this be calculated from the damage done?
I'm not aware of that, sir. I don't know. I'd have to check with the naval architect.
What is the speed limit that the Coast Guard sets for that area?
I don't know, sir. If you'll get with Petty Officer Nelson, who's around here someplace, give him your name and phone number. We'll be glad to try and get that information for you.
The testing of dispersants, there has not yet been any testing of dispersants. Is that?
I believe they tried to use dispersants yesterday afternoon, but there wasn't enough wave action to make them effective. When I came in here, Commander McCall, the captain of the port, was out observing the tests. I don't know what the results of those tests this afternoon were. Yes, sir.
No more tankers, oil-laden ships will be allowed in around?
No more commercial vessels. So that would include tankers. One of the vessels that comes under that is the ferry, I believe. Yes, sir.
If you're planning on using, what happens to the oil? Does it just go out of sight, out of mind, underneath the surface, or what?
It's my understanding, sir, and I'm not a marine biologist, that the dispersants will help break the oil up into smaller particles so that they can biodegrade more readily. Anything other than that, that's the limit of my knowledge. Yes, ma'am.
Did you test on dispersants yesterday and today, or just yesterday? I'm not clear.
Test using dispersants yesterday afternoon, and they're repeating the test again now.
The ignition test that they mentioned earlier in the day.
That is, as far as I know, is going on now. I'm not aware of the results.
But it is going on. There is some burning going on?
That's what I've been told. Yes, ma'am.
Can you explain those tests to us a little bit? Do you know how that works?
The dispersion test?
No, the ignition.
It's my understanding, please bear with me, it's rather limited, that what they will try to do is burn the oil inside. It's called in situ, I-N-S-I-T-U, which means they'll attempt to use the natural flammability of the oil to burn it in place. I don't know, sir. I was told that the area around the Exxon Valdez and the Exxon Baton Rouge has been boomed off. I have been out there. Has boomed off the entire spill area, yeah, the 50 square miles. Right. It's okay. Not boomed off now, sir.
You sure?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that. I'm sorry, sir? Yes, sir, there are concerns about the structural stability. Whenever you remove oil from a vessel this large, if you do it in a manner that's not controlled, or you're going to run into something that's not safe or effective. You can end up creating more damage than you started with.
Will the Fish and Board be examining the Coast Guard's role in this?
I imagine they'll be examining everybody's role in it.
Because I've been very concerned with the number of waivers to regulations that the Coast Guard has been granting here to the tankers.
I'm not aware of any waivers to regulations, ma'am. I can't see in the light.
January, during the windstorms we had with the excessive high pressure, tankers fully loaded were allowed to go within 1/2 mile of Rocky Point to let off the pilots.
Well, ma'am, I wasn't here in January, but I'm sure the captain of the port acted with what he thought was safe measures, or made sure that the vessels were going to be operating within safe standards. But I wasn't here. I can't prejudge him.
To clean up the oil instead of dispersing it, why aren't they out there trying to clean it up?
I don't know, sir. I don't have that with me. I didn't stop by National Weather Service on the way in. I understand it may get a little bit windier, but I'm not really sure. Yes, ma'am.
Starting at 6:30, and I know this is a repeat. What were the subpoenas that were issued, and what were those for?
Okay, the three subpoenas were issued. One was to the master, and actually one subpoena was issued, I'm sorry. And two crew members will be subpoenaed. The order requires them to remain available to the National Transportation Safety Board investigators, who will arrive Sunday.
Are all the crew still on the ship?
To the best of my knowledge, yes, sir.
Including those three individuals?
I believe the master may be in town. I'm not sure. I believe it's, according to Exxon, I believe it's Joe Hazelwood.
Where's he from?
No, sir, I don't. You might want to check with Exxon.
The subpoenas. Who has the power to do that?
The captain of the port issued the subpoenas, but a Coast Guard officer that's in charge of the Marine Investigation Board has the power to issue these subpoenas. Yes, ma'am. Secondary pollution.
Right.
That would mean if you took your boat through the slick and the hull became fouled, you got oil on the side of the hull.
We would volunteer our boats to help in the cleanup effort in booming off some of our more critical areas. And we were wondering if we could have a cleanup station set up out like they did similar to Glacier Bay, so we could use our boats to help clean up and then not be fined for turning around and getting our boats polluted?
Well, the cleaning station that you're talking about, I'm sure Exxon will take steps. If you're on contract to them, I'm sure steps will be taken.
How about if we're under volunteer with them?
I don't know, ma'am. But again, any vessel owner that fouls his hull is responsible for making sure it's clean before he brings it back into port.
Yeah.
The representative from Exxon State is first to let us know about the blood alcohol test. Are you in a position to let us know first?
No, sir, I'm not. And I don't have the test results, one. And two, the test results would be included as part of the investigation, I'm sure. So when the investigation was made public, that would probably be the time that you would get the results from the Coast Guard.
When do you think the results would be made public?
I can't even guess, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Well, knowledgeable in this area, but what sort of monetary fines or steps are taken as far as Exxon? If we spill 5 gallons of oil on the ground in the dry dock, we get fined $100. What sort of, you know, position is Exxon in? Are they fined for a situation like this?
I know that there's the potential, but I don't know what steps have been taken at this point in time. Excuse me.
This is Dave Hammack. We're broadcasting now from the Valdez Civic Center. The Exxon press conference has not yet begun. There has been a brief statement being made by a Coast Guard spokesman. The Exxon section of the press conference has been postponed once again, officially, until 7 o'clock.
9 and 3, please grab Todd Nelson and give him a preferred time. Apparently something has come up which I don't know about, probably which relates back to the office. 9 and 3,
our suggestions for different times.
Right, alternate times.
7:30.
4:30.
7:30 and 4:30.
Okay, I do have two additional phone numbers for the Coast Guard news operations. 835-5124 and 835-5119. 5119. And if that's it. Oh, I'm sorry.
How far is that off the shipping channel?
I believe that's about a mile or 2 miles outside of the shipping channel. I haven't measured it exactly, but it seems right around those parameters.
It's 3 miles from the
3 miles, sir.
From the inbound lanes. It's 5 miles from the middle of the outbound lane.
3 miles from the inbound lane, yes, sir. No, ma'am, I don't.
Again, this is Dave Hammack. We're at the Civic Center, at the Valdez Civic Center. Press conference was originally scheduled this afternoon for 6 p.m. by Exxon. That press conference was postponed until 6:30 and postponed again until 7. But a Coast Guard spokesman took the opportunity while folks were gathered here, and there are about 150 people gathered at the Valdez in the ballroom. Members of the national press, as well as members of the community as well. In the past two press conferences, it's been mostly fishermen, but tonight there's quite a showing of residents of Valdez, folks from all sectors of the economy. Again, the Exxon press conference has been postponed until 7 o'clock. It's about 20 minutes from now. We'll be standing by and planning to broadcast that portion of the conference live. So until then, this is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center, turning it back over to the studio. This is Dave Hammack at the Valdez Civic Center. Jack Arras, the president of Exxon Shipping, has arrived, and the press conference is about to begin. Again, this is KCHU live coverage of a press conference being held by Exxon at the Valdez Civic Center. Jack Arras, president of Exxon Shipping, has arrived with his entourage, and after about 2 hours of delay, the press conference is beginning.
I see more microphones here. From about the time of our last press conference, I think we broke up about 1:15 until about 7 o'clock. I was involved in the first test of the dispersants. I apologize for being late, but I felt that it was important that we get as much of a test underway as we could before we lost the daylight. I'd like to start by confirming that the Exxon response team has assumed full operational responsibility for all of the non-government response activities. Once again, I'd like to thank the U.S. Coast Guard and the Alaska DEC and Alyeska for its initial response action to the oil spill. Let me talk a little bit about the spray dispersant test. We didn't actually get the spray plane in the air until about 5 p.m., and we were only able to get the first half of the test completed before we just about lost daylight. We are cautiously optimistic based on what we saw the first half of the test. We're going to have to confirm the results tomorrow morning, and we'll be doing that around 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and also completing the second half of that test. The ship completed transferring 11,000 barrels to the Exxon Baton Rouge That was done early in the morning. That was the first test of the ship system, and we had to shut down that test, as I mentioned at our first press conference today. We had to shut down that test because we saw some additional oil release around the vessel during the test. We now have a boom in place around the ship, and we'll begin the second test using the ship system to transfer oil tomorrow during daylight. We don't want to do it tonight because we really can't see the condition around the vessel. What we have also done is brought on board two large submersible pumps, and we expect that the transfer operations using those submersible pumps rather than the ship system will begin within the hour, we hope. We have four more submersible pumps en route, and they will be brought on board tomorrow morning. So that without the ship system, just using the submersible pumps, we should be able to reach a transfer rate, a maximum transfer rate of approximately 20,000 barrels per hour. Of course, that will be increased significantly if we can begin to use the ship's transfer system. The divers video survey was completed at 6 p.m. Tonight. The tape is being viewed on board the vessel by our salvage managers, and we hope to get a look at the video ourselves later this evening. We began our informal investigation of the incident this afternoon. Two of our attorneys boarded the vessel at 3:30 p.m. and began interviewing the key members of our crew. We have confirmed that all mechanical systems and electronic systems were fully operational. Therefore, our investigation is now focusing on the activities of the master, the officer on watch, and the helmsman from the time the pilot was disembarked until the vessel went aground. That was a period of about 1 hour, during which time the vessel moved approximately 8 miles. Our investigation has revealed that the vessel was maneuvering to avoid ice in an area below where it had disembarked the pilot. In the process, the vessel made a series of course changes and was turning toward the vessel separation lane when it grounded on Bligh Reef. At the time, the captain was not on the bridge, and another ship's officer had to watch. The captain has been relieved and has been taken off the vessel. He will be made available for the investigation of this incident by the National Transportation Safety Board. Our investigation is ongoing, and these are our very preliminary findings. I have not had a chance to talk to our attorneys myself, and what I've just passed on to you is what I got as a statement from them based on the very initial part of their investigation. We also completed this afternoon the first mapping of the area. This is to define exactly the location of the oil, and in particular to define those beach areas that have been impacted. The major impact area, as you might expect, is around Bligh Island. We have defined areas for initial beach cleanup, and we will have the first work crews in operation tomorrow. We've also met with representatives of the local fishermen's groups. They have defined sensitive areas from their perspective. We've also worked with the state agencies who have also helped define sensitive areas for us. These are areas which we will begin to protect in a priority order. We have two fishing boats that have been contracted to begin this process. They are currently loading boom, and I understand that first light tomorrow, it's the plan that they will begin to deploy that boom in Galena Bay, which I think was defined as the most sensitive area. That's all I have. What would you like to know?
The statement once again about the circumstances of the actual grounding, what the ship was doing. You said it was turning towards something. I didn't catch that.
The vessel was turning back toward the separation, the vessel traffic lanes when it grounded on Bly Reef. It was to the east of the vessel traffic separation lane. It was in the process of turning west back into the separation lane when it grounded.
Do you know why it got so far off the lane?
No. That's part of the ongoing investigation.
When will the drug alcohol test results be available?
The Coast Guard really has control of that. I understand they shipped it to Anchorage, and I don't know when they expect the results. My understanding is they do not have the results. We had planned an ignition test, and they were out there to do the testing. I don't know if they ran out of daylight or not, and I don't know if the test was completed. It may have been. We interrupted that test, or we pushed that test back so that we can complete the spray dispersion test. We were really racing daylight, and we wanted to do at least the first part of the dispersion test first. As soon as we left the area with the spray plane, we told them to go ahead with the ignition test, but I'm not sure whether they got it on completed or not.
On the dispersion test, could you describe perhaps the area that the test did involve and what the actions of the aircraft and the boats were?
We were in a helicopter about roughly 500 feet off the ground. The spray plane was a C-130, specially fitted out with an ADS package, which is a large storage tank, which is fitted right in the cargo compartment of the C-130. They opened the back ramp, and have this spray arrangement, which is placed out of the back ramp. They get down to about 50 feet off the surface, and then they begin to spray. In the area we sprayed, we began just south of the area where they are currently skimming. If you've been out there, you know there's a skimming operation going on. We started just south of that, and we moved basically in a north-south direction. The vessel, the plane would make a pass. We would come down helicopter and view the results as best we could, and then it would continue to make successive passes opening the lane. You know, from what we could see, there clearly was a change. Now, there was absolutely no color distinction at all. I mean, everything looked blue-gray. So that was that is really why we want to be a little cautious at this point. We really need to get up in daylight tomorrow morning to view the results. But clearly, it was making an impact. But at this point, we want to just say we're cautiously optimistic. We really need to see what's going on tomorrow morning at daylight, and we want to run the second test. The second test involves a different plane with a different spray nozzle configuration, and we want to understand which is the best approach to take.
What's on the integrity of the ship now?
We really have no information other than what we gave out at this afternoon's press conference. We have done further analysis, and we still come up with about the same oil released, and that is 240,000 barrels. I think the second analysis we did came up with 235, but believe me, that's close enough. We're going to call it 240 at this point. The other thing, we do feel that we have a little bit more understanding of why the vessel has a starboard list. One of the ballast tanks on the starboard side of the vessel was also breached and has 12,000 tons of water. I believe that's the right number. And that's, we think, is the major factor in the starboard, current starboard list.
Is there a danger at this point?
No, at this point the weather is very, very favorable. There's very little movement out there. The vessel still has plenty of buoyancy. Our concern is not so much that the vessel will We'll lose buoyancy, but our concern is for the list condition. With all of the starboard tanks damaged, she just doesn't have any buoyancy on the starboard side. So we need to view this diver's video to give us a better understanding of the condition at the bottom. And I haven't had any feedback yet. They just completed that survey at 6 o'clock tonight.
Do you have any contingency plans if the weather does worsen? Are you going to try to pump more ballast water on to make it sit solid on the reef?
At this point, what we're doing as we transfer cargo off, as we draw from the damaged tanks, there is an automatic displacement. As we lift oil from the top, the water comes in from the bottom so that it maintains the same level. That's out of the damaged tanks. As we take oil from the undamaged tanks, we are putting water into the current empty ballast tanks. There are two ballast tanks on the port side, the undamaged side. There are three cargo tanks which contain oil, and there are two ballast tanks which are empty. So as we pull oil from the undamaged tanks, we will in fact be lightening the load on the vessel. We're going to put seawater into the ballast tanks. Our aim at this point is to keep that vessel just absolutely as unchanged as we can. And that's why we got to do this a little carefully, and we're going to do it step by step. The weather, I understand, is going to be favorable for at least another day or so, and that'll be a big help to us. We are doing everything we can.
What are your contingencies if the weather turns rough? What are you going to do?
We are going to just keep on transferring. You know, we've got a million barrels of oil on there, and we aren't going to breathe easy until we get that million barrels off. We got to do it as cautiously as we can. We've done that kind of transfer in much rougher weather. We have a third vessel en route that's coming up from Portland, so we've got plenty of capacity to do this exercise. And we'll just keep on doing it. The vessel itself is resting very easily on a flat ledge. She is not, and that came from the first diver's survey last night. So she is resting on a flat ledge on approximately 30% of the underwater body is on that ledge. There's deep water all around, well, deep water 50 feet or more in all four directions around the vessel. And she is in a good resting position.
Is there any oil leaking from the ship now?
We flew over it after the dispersion test, and there is some oil in the vicinity of the vessel where it's boomed, but we don't know whether it's been there since this morning. You know, there's very, very little movement out there. It's just like a lake. So it's hard to tell whether the oil that's just south of the vessel is something released in the past hour or past 12 hours.
Why has it taken so long to get the booms out there?
I don't really know. The boom was, I personally gave the order to get the ship boomed. There was a boom out there from, I guess, yesterday or the day before. And this afternoon's press conference, I explained that the first concern, while the vessel was released, while there was a lot of oil immediately in the vicinity of the vessel, we felt we did not want to boom it at that point because that new oil is gasifying. There's a lot of gas being coming off of the new oil in particular, and you don't want to confine that around the vessel. You just build a big gas bubble around that vessel. Now that there is no oil flow, other than that spurt we saw early this morning when we started to transfer cargo, now that there isn't any oil coming out of the vessel, we're going to boom it. And in fact, I think it's already completed.
The slick is contained at this point, would you say?
The slick itself is right now well south of the vessel. Well, I don't know, maybe a mile or so. It's hard for me to define distance when I'm up there in a helicopter. But it's moved south, and it's spreading further south. Skimming operations are going on, I don't know, it might be a couple miles south of the vessel. That's not an exact number, I'm just guessing. But that's in two areas where they had this afternoon tried to boom the leading edge of the slick.
I think the slick is now well south of that. In fact, we were spraying well south of it, so it's clearly migrating southward.
Pardon? Is the leading edge of the slick now boomed?
It's boomed in the area where they are skimming.
So what percentage of the slick is actually contained now?
I don't know.
How large is the slick in square miles at the moment?
I really can't say that. The fellows that were up doing the mapping came down and said their estimate was 10 to 12 square miles. Now, when they talk about 10 to 12 square miles, they're talking an area that is predominantly oil covered. There may be slick streams well south of that. In fact, I think there's slick streams as far south as Smith Island and even a little further south of Smith Island. But when they try to define where the slick is, they're talking about the area which is predominantly oil covered.
How fast can the skimmer clear oil out of the water?
I really can't say.
How far is the ship from the main lanes in that area by the closest reckoning?
I think the measurement that was made this morning was it depends on whether you're talking about the bow, the center, or the stern, because she's facing the lane. But taken from the center of the vessel, I think it was 1.1 miles.
Could you tell us how many beaches the oil slick has reached and which ones they are?
The major area is around Bligh Island. I just got a very cursory report from the mapping crew. In fact, we crossed paths at the airport. They were coming off the helicopter that we were going on, so I got about a 35-second summary. They said there was some oil in the vicinity of Naked Island, but that area was not impacted to any significant degree. What they were trying to define was there an area sufficiently impacted that they could begin the cleanup process? And they clearly have defined three areas of Bligh Island where they're ready to go to work with cleanup. That is the most heavily impacted area.
Do you feel where on the island, north, south, east, west, anywhere?
I don't have that. I can give you a better assessment tomorrow, but other than the spray operations, I got about 25 minutes from four or five different people while I was shaving to come over here. So my information from this afternoon's press conference to this one is primarily the spray operations where I was involved in. Yes, ma'am.
I'm concerned about the effect on wildlife, particularly otters, whales, and sea lions.
As far as we know right now, there's been very, very minor impact. We do have a bird rescue operation that has been started. I can't tell you. We have...
Someone was reporting a dead sea lion, and I also had heard that about 300 sea otters had been affected. Do you know anything about that or know who does?
No, I don't. Alan, can you help me?
Well, our best estimates indicate that perhaps 50 sea otters have been in the vicinity of the slick. We haven't seen any major bird oiling. There have been a few birds returned. That's really all I have.
As of this afternoon, we had about 2.5 miles of boom, and there was another 22,000 feet en route that was in Alaska that's just being moved into Valdez, and we're accumulating boom all over the country at this point, and we'll be flying it in. I don't know. I understand there were a few. Alan, could you help me?
None yet.
He says.
Alice Bergner arrived in town this morning. She is now establishing a bird rescue unit. She is the internationally known expert for oil birds. She's mobilizing a crew now and will begin surveying and trying to locate oil birds tomorrow. We also have en route sea otter experts will be arriving either Sunday or Monday.
Sure. This is Alan Mackey. Alan?
In addition to Alice Bertner from the International Bird Rescue Institute, California, we have
a couple of sea otter experts coming from the West Coast. They're arriving either late tomorrow or Monday to provide assistance in the identification of the oiled sea otters and the cleanup methods that they've published upon. We'll be continuing the field assessment and trying to locate the magnitude of problem with respect to the birds. We haven't yet found any major colonies or major oil areas. There have been isolated instances of some birds. We expect to be fully prepared to treat in any oil birds that do get brought back into the system.
You said the captain was not on the bridge. Where was the captain at the time of the accident?
I believe he had left the bridge after the pilot was disembarked, and he was just below the bridge in his cabin.
His cabin?
Yes.
And who was the person who was on the bridge in charge?
It was the officer of the watch, and I don't have his name.
With regard to the blood alcohol test, will you be informed of the results, and will you tell us when you find out?
As soon as I find out, I'll certainly tell you. I promised you I'd tell you anything first.
Do you have any reason to believe that alcohol was involved?
No, the tests are mandatory under a very recent Department of Transport federal government law that went into effect, I'm going to guess, about 6 months ago. And it requires in any type of incident like this, whether it's a railroad or an airplane or a ship, that all of the principals be tested for drug and alcohol. So at this point, it is a legally required test. You might recall just a few weeks ago, there was a challenge to that, and the Supreme Court ruled and upheld the law. That's the law we're talking about here. That investigation is going on. You know, that detail I really need. We really need to continue our interviews and interrogation, and I have not had a chance to even talk to our lawyers that are doing that.
When you say the captain was relieved, sir, is that a disciplinary term?
No, he was, he was just exhausted. And we've got a very delicate operation going on out there. We have one of the previous masters of Exxon Valdez. His name is Captain Bill Deppe. He is now on a shore assignment with our San Francisco office, and he came up with the first response crew. And he has experience in lightering operations and is also very familiar with the vessel. So it was my decision that I really wanted to put a fresh leader on that vessel, and I wanted to give the previous master a little rest because he was under considerable strain, as you might expect, and we're giving him a chance to rest up and collect himself.
Now?
Yes.
Is he going to be ensconced away, or is he going to be available? Or?
Well, the first thing we need to do is get him some rest. The second thing is to get him some counsel so that he can begin to work. He has been named as a principal in the investigation, and I think which will begin Monday. So that means he's got tomorrow to begin to work with his counsel, and I think he'll probably be doing that all day.
You'll get him a lawyer then?
Yes.
Regarding the diver's video, will that be available for us to see, and will there be somebody perhaps who can explain what we're looking at there?
Yeah, the video itself has an audio explanation as the diver transverses the underwater body. There is an audio both from the diver as to what he is seeing, so that you could associate that with the video, and also you can hear the person on deck describing the position of the diver. So there should be two audios going on plus the video. I have not seen it yet. We hope to get it off the vessel. It's on the vessel right now, and it's being viewed there by our salvage people that are on board the vessel. I hope to get it in by boat tonight, and either late this evening or first thing in the morning. I want to take a real good look at it myself with our salvage people that are here in Valdez. I don't know what copy, video copy facilities are available, but we will make 50 copies or how many we can, and everybody will get one. I just don't know what sort of video copying facilities, if any of the media have facilities, as long as you promise not to lose the original, you know, you can make copies.
Where is the second dispersion test taking place tomorrow?
Oh, it'll be back here. It'll be with a different plane and a different spray nozzle configuration.
And
it'll be right out in the slick.
It's going to be skimmed first before dispersal chemicals are...
The skimming process, you know, someone asked the rate. I can't answer you specifically, but, you know, just let me give you an impression. It's very slow. If we wait at the skimming area before we dispersed it, we'll be here for 4 weeks. And that's really the concern on mechanical cleanup. It is a slow process. So if the dispersant can be done and is effective, that certainly is our first line of defense. So tomorrow morning, in roughly the same vicinity as we were spraying today, we may use a different access or a different direction, but we will be spraying in the same general area.
I understand the government has authorized this dispersal system. What department and who specifically authorizes it?
There is a group called the Regional Response Team. It has members of the federal government, that's in particular the Coast Guard and the EPA. It also has members of the state government, DEC and other agencies, Fish and Wildlife and agencies like that. And it's really the decision of the RRT to go with the dispersing, and they are aware of the tests we want to carry out, and they've certainly given us the go-ahead. The principal officer involved is Commander McCall, particularly in that area called a Zone 1 area, where actually he himself has the authority to initiate the dispersing, but given the sensitivity of this, we clearly want to make sure we're working with the consensus.
I'm a little concerned with your opening remark that you've now assumed full responsibility for this spill.
Well, we assumed full financial responsibility from about the first moment we got it.
Right, but then
what we are at this point is full operational responsibility for all of the non-government response activities.
Exactly your phrase, and I haven't heard that phrase before. So does that mean that you are going to pay for the non-government response
No. I said we have assumed full financial responsibility. That has no qualification associated with it, as I mentioned last night to you. What I'm now talking about is operational responsibility or operational control for the response activities. Obviously, I can't control the activities of the U.S. government or the state of Alaska. What I am controlling is all of the non-government response activities.
What services do you anticipate bringing in? Alleviate responsibility from Alyeska now?
Well, someone has to be in control of the response activities. Alyeska's job is to carry out the first response until the company response team or whoever that company designates gets on scene. Obviously, the only one who can do the first response is the people who are here, and Alyeska did that. Now what we're saying is our response team is fully operational. We have roughly 40 people managing and supervising different facets of it, including a number of outside experts in different areas who have been brought in. Alice Berkner is just one of those that Alan had mentioned. But in total, we've got about 40 people working different facets of it. And somebody's got to be in control of that. What we're saying is the Exxon response team is now in operational control and has taken operational responsibility for all of these non-government activities.
All right. We'd like to formally request a meeting with the mitigation, our claims team or whatever you're calling them tomorrow. What would could you suggest a time and a place?
The gentleman's name is Don Marston, M-A-R-S-T-O-N. He is the Exxon claims coordinator. He is working with at least one, and I believe two outside firms that are assisting him. And let me suggest that perhaps 10 o'clock meeting might be in order, if that's okay. I know tomorrow's a special day for many people, so I'll let you call it, and I'll make Don available.
10 o'clock is fine. Where?
The only thing I know in the whole world at this point is the Westmark. I think I own it at this point. So
the conference room at the Westmark at 10 o'clock?
I don't know. Why don't we say at the Westmark, and we got people camped everywhere there.
Okay.
Well, and also they have a special Easter brunch going on, so we're going to have to try to find a place away from all the activity. And, you know, hey, we've just messed up everybody's Easter holiday enough. So we will, let's say it's 10 o'clock, Mr. Marston will lead it. It's at the Westmark unless we get back to you sooner. And if you show up in the lobby at 10 o'clock in the Westmark, we'll be there.
Just one last question. Did you say that you had cleaned up and estimated the Baton Rouge?
The Baton Rouge
had taken on 11,000?
11,000 barrels during that first initial test in the morning. And that test was stopped as soon as they saw the movement of what they thought was new oil.
All right, thank you.
There is a DEQ, a DEC representative on board, and he is, certainly he will need to feel comfortable before we start the ship's operation again. Yes, let me hit this side. Yes.
Helmsman, you said you don't have the name of the other man.
I don't know
but...
that either.
Okay.
Could you explain how an ignition test works? How does it work?
Well, they need to boom an area and allow a sufficient accumulation of oil. And then they place igniters in the accumulated oil and attempt to ignite the oil.
So there are flames and smoke or what?
I've never seen one myself. But I'm at, you know, what you're seeking is combustion, so you're going to get some burning.
Where have they been used before? What conditions?
I don't know. I don't know.
Are they experimental or?
I don't know that either.
Who does?
Oh, I've got 40 experts, but
it sounds like they're not used very much then, or.
I don't know that either.
Earlier today, you described how there are large enough holes in the bottom of this ship that divers can swim in and out of them. Does this mean that the ship will never be used again? Is it too far gone? Or?
No, I would say based on that initial assessment, and it was done under very poor conditions, and the only thing we have other than the divers' verbal report to us is a dozen photographs, which are very, very murky. But based on that, I certainly would say that the vessel at this point is certainly repairable. Now it's a brand new vessel.
Will this event affect Exxon's position on the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge?
I doubt it.
Why not?
I don't think it should. Yes. I'm getting to meet a lot of friends here. I'm recognizing faces.
Sorry about that. Right. This morning when I came over from Cordova, we flew out past where the other tankers are anchored, and we noticed a large amount of oil sheen and accumulation in the Knowles Bay area. So far, all the indications are that has not been associated with the current spill. But what I'd like to ask right now is that when your surveyors go back out, if they would take the time and specifically assess that area there to make certain that is not part of that same spill, and if it's not, if they can determine where that came from.
Okay, I understand your concern about that. Based on what I know, I would say that
that the oil from this spill has not migrated anywhere near that, but we'll certainly check it out.
There's also evidence that fingers from that have drifted up into Gravina Bay, which is well away from that. And if this spill is not a part of that, we need to determine where it's coming from and address that as well. Maybe you don't, but we that live here and are part of this environment have to.
We start this cleanup, we'll take everything that's out there.
Right. We'll take logs, trees.
Logs.
Can I retract that?
I hear a voice, but I'm kind of blinded.
Mr. Iros.
Yes.
My name's Jim Brown. I'm a commercial salmon fisherman and a herring spotter pilot from Cordova. I wanted to point out a few things about our stocks. Herring are a noteworthy fish in that the adults are mature spawners by approximately 3 years of age and up to 7 years of age. They begin spawning by three and continue to do so annually during the month of April, up to at least 7 years of age. And by introducing hydrocarbons into the water corridor, which, by the way, takes only half a part per million to destroy eggs, you kill all of the herring from the 1989 season. The fishery amounts to at least $15 million in lost income to the commercial fishermen in this area. But the problem doesn't stop here. It takes a full 14 years for these returning fish to complete their cycle. This means that to kill a herring of today, your toxicity has a biological effect that leaves a wake of at least 14 years. Salmon are different in that they spawn once, but the effect is roughly the same. With the 2 year returning pink salmon of 1989, you have a tremendous opportunity you have a tremendous opportunity cost in 1991, again in 93, and so on forever. Silver salmon are a four to five year fish. Chum are a 3 year. Sockeyes are a 4 to 5 year fish. Once you kill these runs, because they die after spawning, they don't rejuvenate. The 1989 salmon season is projected at $70 million. The reputation of the superior quality of Prince William Sound salmon runs worldwide as a leader in the industry. The reputation, the name, and the image of the salmon coming from the pristine waters of the Sound will undoubtedly be reduced to that as coming from a cesspool of festering funk. The several thousand, up to 6,000 people of Cordova, Alaska, and those who depend on the Prince William Sound to feed their families and clothe their children, have a question for Exxon Corporation tonight, which is one of the largest corporations in America. Does the severity of your oil spill run deep enough to take full responsibility for the opportunity cost to the fishermen of the Prince William Sound down the road, as well as the rejuvenation of the fishing stocks of the Prince William Sound?
Jim, I understand your concern. I'm not a lawyer, so I can't get into the qualifications that you're talking about. What I've said is we will take full financial responsibility, and I define that as any reasonable claims. You know, I can't at this point define what a reasonable claim is.
Do you find it a reasonable claim that due to the 14-year cycle of herring, and to the inevitable decimation of our salmon stocks never to return, do you think your attorneys would be willing to put it in writing and save the town of Cordova, Alaska, from extinction?
At this point, what our priority is to protect all of those areas. What we're going to do is protect those areas so the type of impact that you're talking about doesn't occur.
Protect them now, or do you mean protecting them for the future, for future generations?
We are going to make sure, we're going to do everything we can, mobilize every resource we can, including yours, the fishing group's resources and activities, to make sure that the oil spill does not impact those areas.
Sir,
you know, I think it's unreasonable to press a little further than that. We can go on and on, but...
Well, I have one more question.
Fine.
Due to the fact that we've had such outstanding seasons in the last couple, 3 years, and due to the fact that the predictions are so bright due to our own actions within the Sound and enhancement, the fishermen of our fishery have had every reason to believe that they can meet their debt service
at the end of the season, at the end of this month, if I don't have any herring, or if anyone for the Prince William Sound don't have any herring or salmon, is Exxon Corporation willing to save these people from bankruptcy when they certainly will not be able to meet their debt payments at the end of this season?
Jim, let me just repeat that we have assumed full responsibility, and we have defined that as all reasonable claims, and beyond that, I really can't define for you. But any reasonable claims you have, and believe me, our objective is to protect those areas, and when we leave here, we want you to be happy.
Were you aware of the lack of responsibility on the part of Valley Eskin?
I don't know if I'd define it that way, but...
What's your impression right now of their response to this spill?
Well, you know, I think they mobilized very quickly. I mentioned in the first press conference yesterday that the grounding occurred at 3:40 in the morning Houston time. And I remember my clock when I got the phone call, which was about 4:20, and I had gotten it through the chain that Alyeska had had initiated. So I know they were mobilizing very quickly. By about 4:30 Houston time, I was in contact with George Nelson and the other Alyeska people, so I know that they were mobilized at that point. So I think they responded very quickly as far as getting things up and running. I know both of their response centers in Anchorage and here in Valdez were manned very shortly after I had got the call, because I was back in touch with them.
I guess then a quick follow-up. What would you change in the god-awful event that the next time occurred? What would you do different?
We clearly have to arrive at that, but right now I haven't even begun to think about it. My whole attention and focus has been on getting that oil off the vessel and get that oil off the water. We obviously have to come back to that, and we'll do that. Okay, what I'd like to do is quit at this point. I think we have another date tomorrow at 11 o'clock. 11 o'clock. And at that point, we'll be back here.
Give you an update.
The Jack Arasi, the Exxon president of shipping, pardon me, the president of Exxon Shipping, has concluded the press conference by simply announcing he was through. It was quite a conference. We're going to try to get Mayor Devens, John Devens of Valdez, to join us here for a moment to talk about. Mayor Devens. We're just finishing up with our broadcast of the press conference. I wanted to take just a moment. I know the city is has been diligently working and meeting. A couple of points that came out tonight had to do with spraying, the second test of spraying the dispersants. The city of Valdez to date has basically been organizing itself and responding to the oil company efforts. Now that we are in a position where we can anticipate some serious response at sea and also beginnings of the investigation, does the city feel like they're beginning to get a picture of what's been going on?
I'd like to say that we have. I don't know that we've got... We certainly have a better picture now than we had yesterday, but we haven't been involved in very many of the meetings, actually any of the decision-making meetings. The state's been pretty good about keeping touch with us. Commissioner Kelso has been very responsive to us. I did send a representative up to their EOC office today, but he was denied admission. So we don't know exactly what they're thinking of. When I sent someone up to check it out for me, he was told that we should come to the press conference. So that's where we sit on that. Now, I haven't had anyone deny me any knowledge when I've asked the question, but in reality, the city would feel more comfortable if we were more involved in some of the decision-making process.
Mayor Devens, the other night, it seems like it's been a week, but I guess it was last night, the city council had a special meeting at which they authorized the expenditure of up to $1 million of the funds held in the escrow account from the Zone 3 differential tax collections. Have there been any response from Exxon or other operators as to response to the offer the city has had to use these funds or its manpower to assist in the cleanup?
In fact, you called me at 6 a.m. yesterday morning, as I recall, telling me that I should become mayoral. And from 6 a.m. until about 9 a.m., I was putting calls in to both George Nelson from Alyeska and to Daryl Warner from Exxon. Apparently, I was calling the wrong person in Exxon, but at any rate, we were making that offer. So far, there hasn't been any indication, we said, that we were willing to help either from a financial standpoint or from a manpower standpoint. So far, there's been no requests that way. We have appropriated $100,000 to repair and line a storage area out here for the absorbent materials that will be used for cleaning up. The rest of the money is there in a contingency account in the event that we need to do something in a hurry to save something within Valdez, and that's the purpose of it right now.
John, the press conferences, I think you've attended all of them. I think I've seen you at most of them anyway, have been rather spirited. The fishermen, primarily from Cordova, I haven't specifically noted any Valdez fishermen, I know, but the Valdez fishermen have been here, if not in force, at least they've been well represented, and have been really pushing or pressing on spokesmen from both the Coast Guard and Exxon and Alyeska for explanations about how it happened and why the response was apparently so slow. Has the city had any official communication with the Cordova city government? I know we've certainly seen the Cordova CDFU and UFA and independent Cordova fishermen. Have we, as a community of Valdez, have we been working with the community of Cordova at this point?
Yes, actually, I've talked to Erling Johansson three times today, and Erling is coming over tomorrow morning. He's going to fly in, and we'll spend some time discussing, and I'll try and show him what is happening on this end. We're trying to keep Cordova as apprised as we can. We've also, our city manager's office has been sending any of the press releases that have been done. He's been copying to the Cordova City Hall also.
All right, so tomorrow National Transportation Safety Bureau team arrives, I guess beginning the official investigation on Monday, but they'll be getting in tomorrow. The work continues with the cleanup. Any other ideas as to what we can expect in terms of action or activity in the next day or so?
Well, I guess, you know, obviously tomorrow the big thing that's going to happen is they will try the dispersant. And I know that's got the fishermen particularly concerned because they're concerned about what the effect of the dispersant is going to have on the water. I understand that Lieutenant Governor McAlpine will be coming in tomorrow. We've talked with him today. Then we're also looking forward to several press conferences and some news releases tomorrow. So I think should be a pretty busy day. And I hope by tomorrow we will have a better grasp on really what is happening to us. I think the thing that Valdez is mainly concerned about right now isn't assigning blame so much as looking at what we can do to stop the spread of the oil and save our environment and save our industries that are very dependent upon that water out there.
All right, well, thank you very much, Valdez Mayor John Devens. This is Dave Hammack. We're at the Valdez Civic Center. The press conference, oft announced and four times delayed, has finally concluded. We'll be back tomorrow. We're expecting at least one, if not two, press conferences from Exxon. We also anticipate that there will be announcements from the Coast Guard and perhaps from other agencies as they arrive and become involved. Stay tuned to KCHU throughout the day. Tomorrow we'll be continuing to keep you updated. We're able to also submit reports to NPR and APRN, and we'll be able to use both our airwaves and also our networks to spread the word and keep you informed. For now, this is Dave Hammack, the Valdez Civic Center, giving it back to the studio. Thank you.